Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Who gets the child when the parents break up? The answer has changed over time, and a new iteration could be on the state legislative horizon. Most child custody battles in Ohio end with one parent awarded sole custody and the other visiting rights. The mother is usually named the primary guardian. But legislation is circulating among the states, including in Ohio, that would make shared parenting arrangements the default, giving both parents a say in child-rearing decisions and equal time with the child. Sushma Subramanian is a science and health journalist and associate professor of journalism at the University of Mary Washington in Virginia. She wrote about the developments in child custody laws and shared parenting for the Washington Post magazine. You'll find a link to her article on our website. Sushma Subramanian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sushma, the question of who gets the child has had a number of answers over the years. Your article was interesting. Can you give us a thumbnail on how things have changed?
Sure. So throughout history, courts have attempted a lot of different approaches to dealing with child custody. And when the U.S. was founded, children were considered property of their father. And so fathers automatically acquired custody. But of course, divorce was less common back then. But that presumption that the father gets the child existed until the 1850s, at which point the mother became favored because of what's called the tender years doctrine, that the mother tends to be a natural caregiver and should have the children. And that continued for about a century until the 1970s. And then favoring the mother was seen as gender discrimination. And courts then attempted to have a more gender neutral approach to deciding who gets the child. And so that's where we got the idea of the best interest of the child standard. And that's where we are today. But a big criticism of this best interest of the child standard is that that means that judges are making these decisions, very subjective decisions about what's in the best interest of the child. And a lot of times they're bringing their own personal beliefs to that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the issue of what happens to children when their parents split up. Most parents manage to come to an agreement without going to court, but when there is a child custody dispute, then it goes to court, and then the judge, as my guest Sushma Subramanian explained, the judge gets to decide. Sushma, most custody disputes, as I said, they are resolved out of court, right? What does that tell us about how generally things work out?
Right. Well, I would say that it's about 10% of cases that go to court, and those do tend to be the most problematic cases where, it's more difficult for the family to come to a conclusion on their own. What does that say? I think that there are a lot of misunderstandings about how judges make these decisions. So when I was writing this story, I kept running into this misperception that, people get joint custody, and people didn't understand what that is. Because when we refer to joint custody, a lot of people are really talking about joint legal custody. And that involves joint decision-making about schooling, location, religion, health, those types of things. And that is the norm for most families. But a shared parenting or a 50-50 joint physical custody agreement is not that common. And so usually a judge will decide, which parent is going to be the primary custodial parent. And this creates a lot of conflict for families for, I think, obvious reasons.
When the dispute is taken to court in Ohio, it tends to default to one primary caregiver,
mm-hmm.
Right? And that is typical in most states where there isn't otherwise legal remedies?
Yes. Usually one parent does become the primary caretaking parent. And over the past 25 years, there's been this, you know, big push to even out gender roles. And so how they decide who's going to be the primary parent involves a lot of gender neutral factors. So judges will consider the parent's preference as well as the child's. They'll think about also the existing parenting arrangement. You know, is there, you know, a primary working parent and a primary caregiving parent, and that really factors in to the decision that judges make.
Hypothetically, then, for example, the one parent is the primary breadwinner, the other is the stay-at-home parent. That would tend to be how it works out. Then they would be the primary caregiver in an arrangement like that.
Yeah. Okay. I would say that is how it works out a lot of the time.
What is the best interest of the child? A legal, is there a legal definition for that?
No, that's why I'm saying it's very subjective.
Okay. How a judge, that's what subjective that. Is. Okay. Gotcha.
It is, the judges do try to maintain the norms of the family. You know, it's a quite traumatic experience for children when their parents split up. And so part of how they make the decision about what's in the best interest of the child is they want to create, the least amount of adjustment for the child. So if there is an arrangement where one parent is doing more of the parenting, they would likely want to maintain that. However, I do want to say that even though there is a primary caregiving parent, there has been an effort over these years to increase the amount of parenting time that the other parent gets as well. So even though, you know, the primary physical custody might not be given to one parent, that doesn't mean that they don't get substantial time with the child.
And time isn't the only issue. It's also parenting decisions, right? Whether or not the kid gets a new iPhone, whether or not they play an after-school sport or stuff like that, right?
Right, absolutely. These are the kind of, you know, the more time that you have with your child, also the more of these kinds of day-to-day decisions you get to be part of.
But with shared parenting, both parents have to work it out together, those kind of questions.
Right. If a judge decides that 50-50 parenting, 50-50 joint physical custody is the arrangement, then yes, that does involve a lot more negotiation between the parents.
The National Parents Organization is leading the charge for the shared parenting legislation in Ohio and in other states. It's a group with roots in the father's rights movement. That's been around for a long, long time. I've already been hearing from them, as I'm sure you have too, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of conflict over, you know, whether it's a feminist issue or not, this idea of shared physical custody, because on one hand, we think of this as being a sign of equality, right? If we could see both parents as being important to a child's development and that mothers aren't the default best parent, right? That's, you know, good in terms of gender equality. But where there's conflict, I think is especially in cases of abuse, because there's a lot of worry among people who deal with domestic violence that this presumption of shared parenting could mean that judges are more likely to overlook instances of abuse because, you know, shared parenting is the goal.
How does a judge's decision one way or the other change the issue of child support?
Right. Well, so how much parenting time a parent is given is tied to the amount of child support that's given. So they're both connected. And that's also caused conflict in the past in the family court system, because people start to wonder whether whether parents are really fighting for more time with their child, or there's also this financial incentive to get more parenting time.
Is there a consensus among researchers or academics about what is best for the kids?
No, there is no consensus about it. And I will say that a lot of the research in this area, I found, is really driven by ideology. And I think that we can't avoid that just across the board. You know, whether we're researchers or people dealing with these issues in our own families or judges, we all bring to our understanding of what's best for the child our own experience and our own families. And so I think that there's a lot of that too when it comes to the research. So the research, a lot of people, kind of pro shared parenting researchers will say that that there's kind of overwhelming support for shared parenting in the literature. But the big question is, because shared parenting hasn't been the norm or hasn't been the starting point for negotiations for families historically, if there's evidence that that children are better off in shared parenting arrangements, perhaps that's just been because shared parenting was more likely to be the choice made for parents who were already getting along, right, post-divorce and separation. And we don't really know what it would look like if that was something that was thrust upon them.
And when all of this is said and done, whether or not the law changes in Ohio or anywhere else, when a judge makes these kinds of decisions, is it hard to change them later on?
Well, it costs families a lot of money to go back and change the outcome, right? So there might be a disincentive there. But I would say if there is a 50-50 presumption, that also creates an uphill battle in the courts to get anything different from that.
And you kind of highlighted one family in your story. It was interesting because I don't know how you found them, but they kind of were both sides of the coin. Can you give us a little thumbnail on that and what you learned from that?
Right. And actually, I'm curious what you mean, both sides of the coin.
Well, because they at first were in deep conflict with each other, but they eventually, they get along now and they work it out.
Right. Yeah. So the couple is Ashlyn and Jordan. And I met them actually because Jordan is an advocate for shared parenting. And he helped to create the law in Kentucky. And they had a very complicated relationship. They were never married. Ashlyn had a child when she was a teenager. And at that time, she decided she no longer wanted to be with Jordan. And Jordan had this image of being deeply involved in his daughter's life. And Ashlyn was raised by a single parent. And so she didn't see that as important. And so over time, they had lots of conflicts in their relationship over that, including there was an abuse allegation in their case, where Ashlyn was worried that Jordan had abused their daughter. There was no evidence found for that, but they went to court over that. And as they went through their legal battle, it looked like the 50-50 parenting arrangement was going to be forthcoming in the state legislature. So Ashlyn just decided, why keep fighting this? You know, I should just go ahead and do this. And then what she did notice over time was that because the law kind of told her you have to share parenting, she eventually adjusted to that. And, you know, people who are in favor of shared parenting will say that it is a way to decrease some of the antagonism, right, that can result because the court is telling you, you know, parents work it out. But I would say that it's not so clear that's actually the issue here, because I think that there are fewer cases that are brought when there is shared parenting legislation, simply because I think it has this 50-50 starting point, right? So there's less room for negotiation to start with. And so parents might just decide it's not worth it to them. But then also, after a decision is made in court, a lot of the times parents will find some kind of peace with whatever that arrangement is, right? And I think that that's been the case for Ashlyn and Jordan.
A couple quick questions. With same-sex marriages or relationships, because this is happening whether you're married or not. So with same-sex relationships, is there not enough evidence to tell us much one way or the other, or is this part of all of this?
Well, I think that more research is needed on I guess the outcomes in the case of same-sex couples, and also if judges decide these cases differently.
And then as far as whether or not the couple is married, is that tended to have any kind of impact one way or the other, or is it not enough evidence one way or the other?
Yeah, that's a good question. Again, not enough is known about that. And it's an area where these are such important decisions for families, and it's really surprising how little research there is about it.
Well, I really appreciate your time and all your efforts. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Sushma Subramanian. She is a science and health journalist and associate professor of journalism at the University of Mary Washington. She wrote about developments in child custody laws and shared parenting for the Washington Post magazine. We'll have a link to her article at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, we're going to have a couple different points of view on this issue. Join us. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A bipartisan bill is pending in the Ohio General Assembly that would make shared parenting the default ruling for child custody when parents split. Current state law dictates parents must actively pursue a shared parenting arrangement. Otherwise, courts will default to granting sole custody more often than not to the mother. Marcy Patton Kaufman is a senior litigation partner at Cordell and Cordell. It's a domestic litigation firm focused on representing fathers' rights. Marcy, welcome to the show. Is it Marcy?
Yes, I do go by Marcy.
Okay, apologize for that. Okay,
no, you're fine.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Marcy, can you give us an overview of how the system works in Ohio and what you know, kind of just describe it to the listeners in lay people's terms?
Sure. So the way things currently stand via statute and what is regularly practiced is when there's actually two different manners of looking at it. There's the juvenile court versus the domestic relation court, and the new proposed bill actually kind of combines those. But if you're looking at the domestic relation court, when parents go to file for divorce, the first thing that the court does is they're going to issue temporary orders determining who's going to be the temporary custodian of that child, or what that parenting time schedule is going to be. And often, not all courts, and it's very kind of goes from court to court, county to county, but they already have standards of what they do. So some courts will do the status quo, which sometimes results into people running to the courthouse to file first so that they can say that the child is physically with them, so they should have temporary custody of the child. Some courts require an affidavit to be filed, and then they make an ex parte decision based on that affidavit, so there's no hearing. So oftentimes these temporary orders kind of establish what's going to happen in the case. And parents who file a complaint for divorce are, one of them may lose some of the rights that they had before they ever even walked in the door. And that's on the divorce side of the world. On the, unwed mother side of the world, mom is already, has legal custody and is granted rights, and fathers that want to pursue parental rights, it is a much more difficult journey for them as things stand right now.
So you're talking about relationships that never form or don't proceed past birth. The mother automatically has custody. Okay, so that's another issue. And then, again, there's unmarried couples that could years, into the relationship split. There's another kind of variation on the theme. And do all these variations on the theme complicate things, or have they made things better for the parties, or what? Because most don't wind up in court. Most work it out on their own.
Correct. And I would say that is 100% correct. Most cases do end up and result in settlement. But for those cases that are litigious, and oftentimes those are the custody cases, they're high, they can be highly litigious. If people go in thinking, hey, I can obtain full custody of my child, and that is, how the statute is written, and I have to approve, or the other party has to prove that shared parenting and a 50-50 parenting time that is in the best interest of the child, that's can be a harder standard. The proposed legislation makes that the presumption, that makes shared parenting and a 50-50 parenting time schedule the presumption. So if you wanted to rebut the presumption, then you had to take a number of steps to do that. And if people go into a case with the mindset that, this is the presumption, and, maybe it'll make them take better steps to working together instead of trying to, pick apart the other parent. It might, I hope, and I see it in Kentucky cases, because Kentucky has a similar law to HB
508 in Ohio. Yeah.
Yeah. That they already go in thinking that, this is the presumption I should, and I'm not saying everybody, but it's a different way of thinking about moving forward in a divorce case.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. There is a bipartisan bill pending in the Ohio General Assembly that would make shared parenting the default ruling for child custody when parents split. Right now, the default tends to be with the parenting, or the custody goes to one parent over the other, that giving them all of the decision-making power and more time with the child. If you have a question or comment this hour, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Marcy Patton-Kaufman. She's a senior litigation partner at Cordell & Cordell. It's a domestic litigation firm focused on representing fathers' rights. And Marcy, I wanted to know, from where you sit, how this addresses the fathers' rights movement that has been brewing for a long time on back burners all over the country, right? Since the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is hugely progressive. And I think that it is a huge step towards putting both parents on the same footing. Life progresses, people progress, things change. We're in a different family dynamic than we were in the 70s. We have stay-at-home dads. There's complete role reversals. You have both parents working. And this kind of legislation is important to reflect that. People have, just because one person might have been the stay-at-home parent that bathed the kids and took them to the doctor, it doesn't mean the other parent isn't capable of doing those things. And, these kids have a right to have equal access to both of their parents, not just one of them.
In states where shared parenting is already the default, what have you learned from that? What has that taught us?
I think that it really, promotes the parents getting along, and it makes it easier for them to co-parent well after their divorce or the termination of the marriage.
Do we know if there's less litigation over the issue at the outset?
Statistically, I don't have those numbers, but just from my personal experience, I do feel like there is less litigation regarding custody matters as a result.
One of the things with the current system is, like it is with so many other judges' decisions, it's hard to go back and get them to change their minds one way or the other. It's expensive. And it's hard to prove a lot of these things. When it comes to shared parenting, is there, and House Bill 508, is there a mechanism in there for returning and adjusting and reassessing?
There's always a mechanism. So the things with custody is it's always modifiable by the court. And that's not going to change regardless if this bill is passed or not. But they have put things into this bill that make it very hard to get, you know, to terminate a shared parenting plan. They've essentially said that it's shared parenting unless you're in an abusive relationship or somebody's got a mental health problem. They make it very, very hard not to have shared parenting, which, you know, I personally believe that shared parenting is the preferred order.
Under the proposed law, what would justify not going with a shared parenting arrangement? Would it have to be something overt, like proven abuse, mental health issues, indigency, whatever, that kind of thing?
So the statute, as it sits, as is drafted right now, essentially has three different things that they have to prove. And essentially they have to prove that it's a detriment to the child, which is similar standard that is required for the termination of parental rights, which is, you know, it's just a very difficult standard. But yes, they have to prove some kind of neglect, abuse, child abuse, you know, something to that effect. Something that mental health of the parties. So if a parent, due to their mental health, is incapable of parenting a child or co-parenting, that's another one of the things that can be considered. And then the conflict of the parents too. So they still consider whether or not the parties are capable of communicating in the best interest of the child. But it's a very minimal, and sorry, I'm looking back at the statute. It's very, very hard to, it's a rebuttable presumption. So, I mean, it's completely switching, the standpoint, you know, where they're supposed to proceed, how they're supposed to move forward, and the mindset and the analysis of the court.
Let's see. I'm going to call on Laura in Plain City. Laura, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually ended up going through a very difficult situation in Washington State where they do have a shared custody law.
Mm-hmm.
I was the stay-at-home parent and my children's father was the employed person.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up going through 13 hearings and a 7-day court trial. And because my family had resources, my extended family had resources, and we were able to hire a guardian ad litem and have all of the things that we needed to prove that there was physical and emotional child abuse, I was able to have full decision making with my children.
Mm-hmm.
But had my family not been in the position to provide me those resources, I would not have been able to have that same outcome for my children. And I think that this is a very challenging situation for families to be put in when one of the parents has not been employed.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And we have talked about that issue that, you know, going back and changing things, addressing things, it's expensive, Marcy Patton Kaufman. How do you acknowledge that when things do need to be reconsidered? And as Laura said, she had resources.
Yeah. Well, the courts, they always have trying to think of the word that they use, but it's kind of like an indigency filing. You know, if your economics are not in a manner in which you can proceed with the fees necessary, the court has other options. And a lot of courts are more progressive where, you know, here in Hamilton County, our Hamilton County court has its own, kind of like an alternative dispute resolution department that they send us to for mediation or for an in-house investigation that's akin to a guardian ad litem, which is significantly less expensive. But even then, they still provide for those people that don't have the means, the opportunity to fill out that application to, you know, provide or receive free services.
So along with kind of these legal changes, there are other administrative changes as well out there that are creating a better environment for these kinds of, for this kind of route.
Yeah. And I can only speak for the courts that I practice in,
sure.
But you know, I know that those things those types of things are available in Hamilton County, in Claremont County, in Warren County. And you know, there are always avenues. You know, we also have a family law clinic in Hamilton County where they can go and seek advice from attorneys that volunteer their time. So there are different avenues to make sure that people have the same abilities and the same rights and same access to the court, as much as the court can provide to make sure that the parties are on an even footing.
Even if 508 was enacted, there's still judges still have a lot of power over this. And I think you said, you know, in every county, it's kind of wherever you're going, it's different depending on what kind of judge you get. And I'm wondering about standards across the board, not just within in a particular family court. Is there anything like that out there, or anything to hold judges to some kind of consistency so that everyone's kind of getting treated equally, whether you're in Cuyahoga County or, Franklin County or wherever you're at?
Yeah, I think that they have built in, you know, the checks and balances. You know, if a court determines that that the presumption has been rebutted, they have to issue findings of facts, meaning that they have to, you know, tell in their decision why this presumption has been rebutted. And, you know, if you as a parent or client wanted to appeal that, then that is going to be something that is listed in that decision for that final appealable order to take it up to the next level. It is completely, it's a completely new way of thinking, a way of analyzing and issuing orders regarding parental rights and responsibilities. And if it is adopted, I'm sure that it is going to go up for clarification as to whether or not, you know, something is reasonable after a decision saying that, you know, shared parenting has been rebutted.
Let's see. Looks like we have a co-author of House Bill 508 on the line, Elizabeth McNeese. Representative McNeese?
Yes, this is me.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just wanted to call in. I've been listening, and I appreciate all of the commentary so far. I think it's an important topic, and I'm excited for the listeners to be able to, you know, listen to what's going on. Ohio does, as has been discussed, we have HB 508, which has been introduced, and it's had several committee hearings. And there have been some things that have been said so far that I did want to comment on.
Okay, could I just stop you right there? Are you a representative? It says you're a co-author of HB 508.
Yes. So I am chair of National Parents Organization Ohio, and
okay.
I am a co-author.
But you're not a state representative.
Co-author. That is correct.
Okay,
yeah,
that's a big difference.
National Parents Organization. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're not a state rep. You helped write the legislation that has been introduced as House Bill 508 in Ohio. Okay, I just need to clarify that. All right, go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
Yes. So first off, early in the conversation, it was mentioned that there really is no consensus among research as far as what is in the best interest of children, specifically as it relates to shared parenting. I would disagree with that. I think there is overwhelming consensus that shared parenting is in the best interest of children, you know, unless there are circumstances otherwise, as was mentioned, such as, you know, cases of child abuse, neglect, domestic violence. Those are reasons that obviously shared parenting would not be appropriate. Our bill does address that. So we've heard rebuttable presumption. And what that means is that the courts will start at equal, but they can deviate away from that if there is evidence of abuse, domestic violence, and neglect. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that we are protecting children, of course, but allow families to enter the courtroom on equal footing rather than the bias system that so many families experience.
Okay. I really appreciate you calling. We're running out of time, so I have to let you go. But thanks a lot, Elizabeth, for giving us a call. Marcy Patton Kaufman, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time. You know, hopefully we can have you back as this thing develops.
No, absolutely. I'd be happy to. And I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that it passes and that this is the new law or some version of it.
Thanks a lot. That's Marcy Patton Kaufman. She's a senior litigation partner at Cordell & Cordell. That's a domestic litigation firm focused on representing fathers' rights. We're talking about a bipartisan bill pending in the Ohio General Assembly that would make shared parenting the default ruling for child custody when parents split up. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A bipartisan bill is pending in the Ohio General Assembly that would make shared parenting the default ruling for child custody when parents split. Current state law dictates parents must actively pursue a shared parenting arrangement. Otherwise, courts will default to granting sole custody, more often than not, to the mother. Danielle Pollack is the policy manager for the National Family Violence Law Center at George Washington University Law School in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you, Anne. I'm happy to be here.
So, what you know, the push for shared parenting legislation is certainly not new. It seems to have gained a significant footing. We've, you know, heard from people about why they worry about this, why the default could be harmful. Can you illuminate us as far as the legal aspects of that?
Absolutely. We, as a general rule, oppose 50-50 presumptions in child custody because it deprives the courts of discretion, which they currently have, so that they can make determinations according to what each family needs and each child needs. It's often not in the best interest of children, and I can talk a little bit more about that. And it's especially harmful when there's domestic violence present in the family. And these cases, where custody is litigated, they do have a disproportionately high rate of reports of domestic violence compared to the average family in dissolution or divorcing. So
that 10% that go to court over custody have a disproportionately high rate of domestic violence issues.
That's exactly okay. Right. Yes.
We've heard from an advocate for the shared parenting bill in Ohio, House Bill 508, who said that, no, the judges can, if there's evidence of domestic violence, of child abuse, of neglect, those kinds of things, that is something that the judge can consider at the time.
So what HB 508 would do, the way that it would change your Ohio custody law, is that it would add this presumption that 50-50 shared custody is in the best interest of the child. And in order for a litigant to overcome that, the burden would be on the parent trying to disprove that. And it creates an incredible hurdle for a parent who is a domestic violence victim, or her child is being harmed, or she has been harmed. It can be he, but generally it's male perpetrated family violence in these circumstances. And it would the court could not go into that best interest analysis, which you have now. They look at these 15 factors to consider a whole bunch of things that are relevant to what the child needs, not the parent needs, but the child needs. And with HB 508, that would be removed until the protective parent, in cases of domestic violence, were able to prove to the court that there was detriment to the child. This is a very high burden. It's very difficult for a domestic violence victim to prove that, or anyone to prove detriment to a child, in order for the court to then be able to move into that analysis of those best interest factors, those 15 factors that you have now, which courts are doing now. The first place they go to is that analysis of those factors. What HB 508 would do would remove that and put in front of that analysis this presumption of equal custody. And in many cases, even when there's not domestic violence, it's just not in the best interest of children to have this kind of blanket policy, because in many cases, for example, one parent has never been a present caregiver. The child doesn't even know the parent. Parent may have been gone for 8 years and comes back and, you know, decides they want to file for custody. And with this presumption in place, automatically that parent would get half custody. That can be really shocking and traumatizing for the child to be taken away from their primary caregiver, who they've lived the first 8 years of their life with, and they have a normal, regular life. Also, their considerations of work schedules and schooling and extracurricular activities for the child, sometimes that just doesn't work for families to have it split equally, exactly in half. So, you know, every family needs to be looked at with their specific needs in mind. And that's what the courts are doing currently. This also would remove considerations for what's age appropriate. You know, a nursing child to suddenly be taken away and given to the non-nursing parent for 50% of the time, you know, in many cases, that's not in the best interest of the child.
But wouldn't that be something, to me, that would be something very concrete. I'm nursing the child right now. My husband can't do that if it's a male, if the other parent's male. Oh, I suppose even if they're female. I mean, can a judge take that into consideration?
If the nursing parent would have to go and litigate and prove that that would cause detriment to the child, okay, then the court could go into that analysis with this 50-50 presumption in place.
Okay.
So no, they couldn't until that nurse, and imagine, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been a nursing mother, but imagine you're home, you have an infant or a young child and you're nursing, maybe you're caring for other children also. Maybe you don't have the financial means to hire an attorney and go to court repeatedly and litigate to prove that detriment. So it would remove the court's ability to go directly into that kind of analysis with HB 508.
I want to get to a couple supporters and get your reaction to what they're going to say. Matt in Dayton, you're on the air. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the air.
You bet.
So a couple things. I really appreciate the conversation. When parents decide to get divorced, the child does not decide to get divorced from the parents. But Ohio's standard parenting plans in 58 of our counties do just that. They push one parent aside so that the child can only see that one parent for a couple hours on Wednesdays and every other weekend. And that does two things. That dissuades parents who may want to seek 50-50 time from doing that because of the high court costs and the expectation that they can't get 50-50 time. And secondly, that incentivizes conflicts between parents. It leaves room for false allegations and really heightens the stress to parents who are fearing that they're going to suddenly be pushed out of their child's life. And what 50-50 allows is the focus to be on the children as opposed to this conflict and battling for custody of the child. I know in my own experience, I was married and my daughter was three when we decided to get divorced. And for the first year and a half, we practiced 50-50 time. And then we went through a custody dispute, and that lasted for 17 months. And during that time, I had to deal with false allegations, all kinds of different things. And I was actually told by the guardian ad litem on our case that, sure, you can disprove the allegations on multiple occasions, but you can't disprove the allegations for the entirety of your life. So I was put in the impossible situation of having to prove a negative.
And at right now, Matt? I gotta let you go, but I want to find out where you're at right now.
Yeah, so the judge ruled and said that it's unfair to punish you for something that you didn't do. Okay. However, because this lasted for 17 months and your parenting time was restricted during that 17 months, it could cause the child's stress to go back to 50-50 time.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
so the judge defaulted to the shared parenting plan that was in effect in our county. So
okay. Well, Matt, I appreciate your insights. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You know, that brings up a kind of a hard concept for me to describe. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, kids are growing up during all of this. These are living beings. They're not static. And I think Matt just gave us a really good example of how that, you know, well, this is what you've been doing for 17 months now. Now the best interest of the child has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, protracted litigation is not good for anyone. It's not good for the courts, the parents, or the children. I don't think that's anyone's goal. It may be good for the attorneys in some cases, but pretty much for everyone else, it's not anyone's goal. Certainly there are, you know, cases where 50-50 works best for families. And Ohio courts do often award a shared parenting. They make that agreement, and that is, they have that ability, and they frequently do award a shared parenting arrangement to parents who are litigating. But I want to kind of touch on this issue that's raised around false allegations, mm-hmm. or intentionally fabricated allegations in custody litigation, because the sponsor of this bill during the hearing last week said, you know, he made a comment that the main intent of the bill is focused on creating accountability for false allegations in custody disputes. And while fabricated allegations do occur, it certainly does exist, there kind of is a hysteria around the idea that allegations of abuse in custody disputes are almost always fabricated or used as a tactic or a strategy. And we have a fair amount of empirical data to show that, to contest that. There was a big study of over 7,000 cases kind of looking at the rate of intentionally fabricated allegations of child maltreatment. And overall, they found that 4% were intentionally fabricated. And then within the custody context, it's a little higher. They found 12%. Again, this is a large sample. And they found that of child sexual abuse allegations, only 6% were intentionally fabricated. And then also found that mothers are the least likely to fabricate these child maltreatment claims. In fact, it's more often the fabricator, the person making the false claims in custody disputes, is the non-primary caregiver, who tend to be the fathers. It's not always the case. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to kind of put a little context around that, because while false allegations happen, it's really not in the majority of cases that you're seeing that are going to court to litigate custody. The majority of cases that are litigating, which is again, only 10% of families that are in dissolution, there are valid claims of some kind of family violence. And that means that the child is in harm's way. And so if you're creating a 50-50 presumption out of hand, you're potentially putting a child in extreme risk, or a circumstance that could be prolonged abuse and trauma. You just had a case in Ohio where this exact thing happened with a mom, Kelly Elliott. Her little kids, Gracie and Caleb, were murdered. They were shot in the face by the father, who had shared custody, and he had a lot of risk factors and threats and a lot of dangerous behavior, abusive history, and nevertheless, he was granted custody time, parenting time, and he killed them. And shortly after he killed them, he put a post on social media about equal parenting, and then he blamed the mother for the the harm. And, you know, there are many, many, many cases, unfortunately, where children are killed in these circumstances. So, you know, that's why a court needs the discretion to be able to kind of go into those best interest factors that you currently have and look at all the circumstances and the parent's history and the child's needs.
Marcy Patton Kaufman, I'm sorry. Danielle Pollack, sorry about that. I'm sorry, we're running out of time. Listeners, I know there's calls waiting. We weren't able to get to them. We will go after this issue more. Danielle Pollack, Policy Manager for the National Family Violence Law Center at George Washington University Law School in Washington, D.C. Thanks for your time. Thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.